Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
Well, welcome, everybody. My name is Jason Corella, and I am happy to work with Collegia and Academica Virtual on digital career initiatives. I am a practicing lawyer, and I am very, very interested in issues related to all sorts of technology-enabled careers, including video production. And in my work as a lawyer and in my work in the media field, I have the pleasure and honor to meet Willard Shepherd, who I know we have a bunch of people on here from Florida, particularly South Florida. Those of you who are from South Florida will know Willard from NBC6 and his work as an award-winning broadcast journalist for, I believe, over 35 years. But what folks, a lot of folks don't know about Willard is he's also a lieutenant colonel in the Air Reserves. He is a very experienced pilot and aviator. And he is also a practicing lawyer who has been a member of the Florida Bar for over 10 years. Those are three very big interests to me, aviation and broadcasting and law. So as you probably guessed, Willard and I get along pretty well. He's also one of the most innovative people I've ever met. And he's always looking at the ways in which technology impacts how we work and how we learn and what the future is going to be. And so without further ado, I'm going to bring up Willard and give him an opportunity to say hello to you. And I want to say hello also. And it's great seeing all of you here.
Okay, well, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, and good night to you, wherever you may be around the globe in terms of your time zone, in terms of watching this today and being with us today. I'm very excited about spending time with you. Airplanes, as you see, I was an A-10 pilot, is very, very close to my heart and one of my passions. And I'm still involved with the Air Force, being a representative of the Air Force Academy here in South Florida, meeting with families and people who are interested in obtaining an appointment to the Air Force Academy. We'll be doing that this evening. And also as a member of the Air Force Civil Air Patrol, we fly search and rescue missions when people, whether out in the Atlantic, any of the waterways here in the state of Florida, become lost, need aid and assistance, and also have a tremendous outreach program with young people who are interested in not just aviation, but all of the sciences. You know, we have the Space Force now that takes people who are interested in that type of technology and moving forward with that, unmanned aircraft systems or drones, which is moving into many, many more commercial applications and government applications across the board. So anytime we can speak about technology, aircraft, airplanes, I was just listening as to just a very short time ago, the Air Force rolled out its new stealth bomber that we've been working on for over a decade. And that was done in California yesterday. So very excited about this chance and opportunity. And when it comes to education, I'm from a family of educators. My mother had the little kids. My dad was a superintendent of schools where we grew up. So education, is specifically public school education, is something very near and dear to our family and our hearts. And anyone who is dedicated to kids and trying to get them to reach their dreams and giving them the skill sets to reach their dreams, I'm a big fan of. Jason.
Wonderful. Thank you, Willard. All right. So I've got a ton of questions here coming in from students, and so we're going to get to those. But what I wanted to start out with, because we're going to do, I think, another edutainment about you as a broadcaster and maybe another one about your career as a lawyer, but I want to focus most of the discussion here about your career as an Air Force pilot. And so I'd like you to start by talking to this audience a little bit about how you became an aviator and a little bit about your career in the Air Force.
Okay. Well, I will mention to you and say that when I first started this, despite my dad's background and those types of things, my dad was in the Army during World War II. And my father at that point had his master's degree from the University of Michigan, but was not allowed to be an officer at that time because of our genetics. And I don't think that sat very well with my father because of all the educational opportunities that were presented to us. He never mentioned to me about pursuing any type of career in the military in any way, shape, fashion, and form whatsoever. And I think that my dad must have been mystified on the day when it actually came that I had my name on the side of an A-10 fighter jet, and he was standing there looking at it because of what he had experienced and the discrimination that he had experienced. I didn't grow up, obviously, flying airplanes or anything like that. All of my training concerning learning how to fly and doing it right and knowing emergency procedures and all the things that it's necessary to be a good pilot, whether you're a private pilot, a commercial airline pilot, a commercial cargo pilot, a charter pilot, or a fighter pilot, are all the same in terms of their rudimentary skill sets. And I learned those in the military. It was a tremendous challenge for me. And I encourage anyone interested in this is that there are only very few of these opportunities. The number of people that are picked to fly in the Air Force and then picked to fly fighter planes is extremely small. As you can imagine, there are a lot of physical fitness requirements, vision requirements, a lot of things along those lines from a physical nature. There's also math and science. And I'm not great in mathematics, but I'm good enough to do simple mathematics. And if you break it down on a simple level, I couldn't build an airplane, but I could fly it. And so I would encourage you to focus on math and science. Tremendous amount of it has to do with that and learning that. And I got much better at that. And then a lot of it in my areas of things that come naturally to me, communication skills, language skills, being able to communicate in a stressful environment when people are actually shooting at you with people who are on the ground that are in the Army or in the Marine Corps, people in other aircrafts, taking that information and being able to ingest it and also present it in a concise, clear manner when lives are on the line. So it's a combination of all those skill sets and also being able to manage your time. That means managing the time in terms of learning all that you need to, but also on an actual sortie, being able to pick out what's most important at that moment when you're low to the ground, doing nothing but flying the airplane. Map, navigation, all of those other types of things have to take a back seat. And if you're at a higher altitude, you can take care of a lot of other things. So it's learning about skill sets and things that you can do in terms of managing your time. And you can apply that to anything, no matter what it is that you decide to do. And I was very fortunate. It took me over 2.5 years to actually get a pilot training slot because I wasn't a private pilot. I didn't have any knowledge about any of this. You know, I came straight from college to go to try to do this. And I was competing against people for these slots whose dads were pilots in the Air Force or in the National Guard or in the Air Force Reserve, who had grown up in this environment and knew not only the things and the skill sets they needed to, but they also had the contacts to learn about where to apply and how to go about that. And I didn't have any of that. So I started from zero. There were times I had tears in my eyes because I didn't think it was going to happen. But I'm a very determined person, and I would encourage all of you, no matter what your dream is, to make it happen and turn that dream into reality with the way you carry yourself and execute every day, because I did turn my dream into reality, and that's something I'm very proud of.
That's excellent. Okay, so we have a question coming in now from one of the classes that pre-submitted questions, and they ask, you know, this is sort of marrying your career as a broadcast journalist and your career as a pilot. Do you ever have the opportunity to fly while you're reporting the news?
A while ago, I actually did a live shot out of the A-10, where our station helicopter, the NBC owned and operated station here in South Florida, launched the helicopter. I was flying a sortie, bringing the airplane here to South Florida for an air show that was going to take place. And the helicopter flew alongside me, and our communications team tied in the radio frequencies that we have in the aircraft, which are used by, except, you know, in a combat environment, but in a regular environment, used by the FAA. And we were able to tie into those frequencies, the technical team at NBC. And so I was actually able to communicate and do a portion of our NBC broadcast from the airplane. So that was something that combined all of those types of things. And then clearly today, if there's an airplane issue, whether that's with the military, private pilots, and here in Florida where we live, and also in California and in Texas, the most number of private pilots anywhere in the United States, and a significant number of flying here in Florida because of the great weather that we have, except with the thunderstorms during the afternoon in the summer season, we have a tremendous amount of private pilots. And therefore, that's something that we look into at the television station. And the same thing here with commercial airline traffic. So if there's any issues that arise with any of those, or we have a matter where we want to educate the public more about that, we're on the television and I'm able to talk about airplanes, and they have to cut me off at the TV station, the producers, because they know I will talk about airplanes and talk about flying until they make me shut up.
That's hysterical. The next question I have is, what do you like the best and the least about flying?
Oh, wow. And excuse my two canines in the background. What I like best about flying, I'm going to say a sense of freedom that, especially flying at night, when the air has, you know, is a less dense and it's just, you're gliding. It's very peaceful to me, when you have that opportunity, to do that. And also the thrill that brings many of us to, you know, flying, is the ability for an airplane and the lift that it creates and the sensation when you look at it, you go, wow, that thing can really go do that. And the lift of taking off and being able to go and the actual aerodynamics that causes an airplane to fly is something that should always be a sense of thrill and excitement for anybody flying any type of airplane. What do I fly like least about flying? I would say the hours that you must pour into it to be a safe and competent aviator. And that doesn't matter if you're flying in a military, flying commercially, a private pilot. I always tell people an airplane is not a toy. If you're not willing to do what an NFL player here is in the United States, or a person in the World Cup now in Qatar, if you're not willing to practice and study on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you don't have any business flying at all. And you must put in the time and the preparation for a flight to be prepared for anything that transpires and be able to execute what your objective is. And when something is thrown into your lap that you don't plan, to be able to execute that and to do it safely and effectively. And that's only done through preparation.
Okay, so your bio indicates that you were one of the first Air Force pilots to publicly fly a MiG-29 fighter. And you're not gonna believe this, but I got a ton of questions about that because it's so cool that you flew a Soviet era Russian airplane. So the question is, what did that feel like as a U.S. Air Force pilot, and how did that happen? What's the story?
Well, the story actually is that the Russians were going to bring MiG-29 to an air show in Cleveland here in the United States. From the research, to our knowledge, no one in the Air Force came forward and said that they had ever had a person who was an Air Force pilot fly one of these airplanes. And therefore, I ended up with the opportunity to do it because I was working in the broadcast media in Cleveland, Ohio. And naturally, when it came and they were looking for somebody to do this, you know, I was the obvious choice. And I got a chance to meet the Soviet or the Russian pilot who had been in the military and then was part of this outreach program that they were having to bring the MiG-29 to the United States. His name was Valery. And we ended up briefing together, spending time together. He was obviously fluent in English, which is why he was one of the reasons he was picked for this. And he was also a test pilot. And so I got a chance to fly with him prior to the air show there in Cleveland. And it was an amazing experience. Obviously, some of the things that the Russians had put in the airplane that were of a sensitive military nature on their end, they had concealed or attempted to remove or those types of things. And I flew in the back seat and he was in the front seat. And there's obviously a portion of the ride where I was actually flying the airplane. And the biggest thing that I got out of it was, in terms of the technology, was that while the airplane had a tremendous airframe, and I had done a lot of studying about this aircraft so that it wouldn't shoot me down if I was ever in an engagement with it. And there was a lot of respect for this aircraft because the MiG-29 could do what's called a Cobra maneuver, where it's able to basically slow down and pitch its wings back and allow another aircraft unable to do that to go in front of it. For those of you that have seen Top Gun, that's basically what Maverick is doing when he throws the airplane and put the speed brakes out and let another aircraft fly in front of him and then drop down behind it and put him in a 6 o'clock position to be able to shoot the aircraft down. This plane has the ability to do that. And the aerodynamics to do something like that is extremely difficult. So we were very impressed with the airplane, its engines, its power, and the airframe itself. But what I did find is that the avionics in the aircraft were light years behind us in the Western world. I thought I was in a Vietnam era F-4 aircraft with old school circuit breakers and all those types of things that the Russians had not in any way, shape, fashion, and form been able to find out and or duplicate and or with their own technology catch up to where we are in the Western world at that time, with the ability to have the kinds of avionics that we do for our aircraft and our weapon systems based on computerized systems. And that was really struck me how far they were behind with that when it came to that kind of technology in the aircraft.
Okay, so the next question, Willard, comes from Juan in the audience here live. And he wants to know, what planes have you flown?
Oh, okay. Well, in the military, I started out flying basically a Cessna 172 and soloing in that airplane. Then in pilot training, I flew a T-37, which is an aircraft that you can actually spin in. And that's one of the first things that we do in pilot training to learn that aerodynamic and how to avoid it and get out of it. Then I flew the T-38. And the T-38 is a training aircraft that was used for several decades to train not only those of us that are American Air Force pilots, but also all of the fighter pilots in Western Europe who would come to the United States for training, and also other countries across the globe, Saudi Arabia, other places that would send their lieutenants here to go to pilot training with us. And then after that, I flew the F-5, which is basically the combat version of the T-38 supersonic aircraft. And we get a chance to fly one ride where we break the sound barrier just to see what it's like. And no, you don't hear it go kaboom or any of those kinds of things from the aircraft. And then I was assigned to the A-10, where I flew that for over a decade. And the other two fighters I got a chance to fly were an F-15. I got a chance to fly that once on a, what we call an incentive ride. And the same thing, I flew F-16, and actually flew the F-16 with the Thunderbirds here when they were here in South Florida. And the pilot of the F-16 was a person that was an air-to-air pilot. He didn't know anything or didn't know much about, you know, air-to-ground mission, which is the A-10 mission. So we went up to a weapons range, and in addition to flying the F-16 and its kind of air-to-air function, I showed him some of the things that the aircraft can do in terms of its ground capabilities on that ride. And I mentioned that ride for 1 second. I want to divert just for a bit to just let people know that in this process and through aviation, even through today, you meet a tremendous amount of people and people that have done incredible things to be able to accomplish something like this with their lives. And one of the most wonderful experiences I have and have had in my now 40 years almost with the Air Force is when he and I went flying, we were taxiing out. And I asked him basically what you all have asked me today. Hey, how did you get interested in aviation and what happened? And he said to me, oh, my dad was a fighter pilot. He was a Navy fighter pilot. I'm like, wow, man, it must be great. And then I said, do your parents come to the air show? And he said to me, and at this point, we were taxiing out to go and take off. He said, my dad got shot down over Vietnam and he got killed. And I was like, wow, man, you know, and your mom, she comes to the shows. And she said, oh, he says, oh, 1,000%. Whenever we're, he was from Seattle, from, you know, anywhere in the Northwest, she's always at the shows. And I said, well, what happened? And he said, my dad came home on leave. And his mom obviously got pregnant during that time period. And he went back to his duty. And he was shot down over Vietnam. And, you know, he never got a chance to physically meet his father. And about that time, we had been cleared for takeoff. And we took the runway, and whenever I tell this, it chills in my arms. Man, he lit the afterburner, and we were going down, and just when he pulled off the runway, I said to him, I says, hey, man, you know every time you do this, your dad's spirit's with you. And he said to me, I know. And that was one of the most touching moments that I had and have had in my 4 decades of association with the Air Force.
And wow.
He was a, you know, great, obviously, aviator, but it was an incredible experience and bond between us that developed just in those few moments from what his story was about his life and how he carried on his dad's legacy with him through the Air Force.
Amazing. We have about 330 participants watching this live. And we're down to about the last 5 or 6 minutes. So we're entering what I like to call the rapid fire question and answer round, Willard. So I'm going to toss some questions out to you from these students. We'll keep the answers really tight so we can get to as many as we can, okay?
Got it.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the plane that you flew most in the Gulf War.
Okay. I flew the A-10. The A-10's mission is to help the Army and to help the Marines on the ground. And we would fly out of Saudi Arabia. Many of our missions were to stop what were called Scuds that were being shot at Israel. And that we would try to find where these locations were, where they were launching the Scuds, we would use the gun on the airplane, the bombs on the airplane, and also the missiles on the aircraft to try to, you know, mitigate them from being able to fly them and destroy them in advance. And our other missions and sorties were specifically to help the ground forces to stop them from being fired upon by artillery sites, tanks, anything along those kinds of lines.
Excellent. And that question was from Quentin. Thank you very much, Quentin. Next up, we're going to try a live question from Carla. Carla, you can go ahead and unmute your mic and ask a question.
Hey, how did you feel when you got the first Emmy Award?
Oh, okay. Carla's changing gears from television. I would say, to television. I would say, obviously, I was very proud of that work. And with anything, it's a team effort. So I have a group of people that work with me in the broadcasting business on any of our projects, photographers, editors, other journalists that are working alongside with me. So it's really a team effort to be able to go and do this. And our biggest thing is we want to provide information and provide service to those people who are watching and our communities. It's not about awards. That's a secondary. It's nice to be recognized by other professionals for your work, but that's not what our purpose is in terms of doing it. Our purpose is service and providing good information so families can make good decisions.
What did you feel that your destiny would be flying fighter jets, and how did you feel while you were in the Gulf War?
Oh, wow, my destiny. I think my destiny was each sortie, each and every day. And flying fighter jets, a tremendous amount of responsibility. You always want to make sure that you do it and do it right. You have people's lives in your hands. I was a junior member of my squadron when I was there. I flew with people that had a lot more experience for me, who taught me a tremendous amount. I was honored to be able and fortunate to be able to be in that situation because they had far more experience than I did, and they passed that on to me, you know, each and every single day. And I just want to say that on a sortie like that, you're so busy and you're so focused on what it is that you're doing. You've learned how to take your emotions and be able to basically, I'm going to say, put those in the back seat so that you can accomplish the task at hand. That doesn't mean to say that there aren't moments of great suspense, but you learn how to overcome that and how to manage that. And that's something that is extremely important, because if you were unable to manage that, there's no way that you could accomplish what your objective is that you're trying to accomplish on that sortie on that day.
Awesome. We have a question coming in from Mrs. Purdock's class in Cadence Pinecrest School. And the student asks, what was your scariest experience on a flight that you can talk about?
Well, I kind of referred to before. There was a certain day, you know, when we were out over an area and, you know, there was artillery fire, anti-aircraft fire going off around the aircraft, mine and the person I was with in the other jet that day. And, you know, we kind of called each other on the radio and said, hey, they're shooting a lot today. And then we, you know, had to remain focused on what our objective is, because there were people on the ground who were counting on us to be able to accomplish that, and that was our focus. So despite what our emotions may have been at that particular moment, you know, it was our duty to continue forward with what the sortie mission and objective was there, to protect the people that were on the ground that were relying on us. And so therefore we went forward and accomplished that mission on that particular day and on the others where that was taking place.
Another question I have here relates to opportunities you've had through the Air Force and the Reserves to interact with pilots and other people in the military from other countries and what that was like.
Oh, it's fantastic. I flew a lot in terms of with people from NATO. My squadron, during the summers, we would go to fly in Germany. We went to fly in Italy. We went to fly in Denmark. I've flown sorties alongside the French Air Force. So those were all incredible opportunities where I spent part of, you know, each summer going over so that the Air Force pilots that were there assigned on active duty could come home and see their families. And we would be there during the course of the summer and fly right alongside, live with the people from the NATO countries. And I believe that there are a significant number of students here who are from Western Europe and some hopefully from Eastern Europe as well that are members of NATO that we would fly alongside. And they were great hosts. And those are some of my most memorable times being able to fly A-10s.
Okay, so if I'm a student and I'm interested in a career in the United States Air Force, like the one that you've had or another one, what advice would you give students you know, here in school in the US about going into that career path? How do you get to be Willard Shepherd pilot?
Well, I would say, first of all, that the great thing about our military service, not just mine with the Air Force, but all of them, is the opportunities that we have across the board. And I tell young people and will tell the students here, it doesn't matter whether you want to be in, just don't associate the Air Force with airplanes and flying airplanes. There's less than 5% of the people that are in the Air Force that are pilots, and there's less than 2% that are fighter pilots. So therefore, that means 90 plus percent of people are doing things to support these missions. And any one of our air bases is a city. We have people that are doctors. We have people like Jason that are lawyers. We have people like your teachers, that we have schools. We have of every walk of life you can imagine, accountants. We have people that are psychologists, psychiatrists, everything you can imagine that you have in your neighborhood, in your city, around you, we have on one of our air bases and we need. And therefore, when you go to do this, it's an educational opportunity. And there's no person that goes through our programs, whether at the Air Force Academy, whether officer training school where I went, whether ROTC or any of our enlisted programs that isn't a success with what they want to do later in their life, because they're learning how to manage themselves. They're learning how to manage and lead other people, and they're learning a tremendous skill set. Whatever their discipline is that they decide to do. If a person wants to be a dentist, one of my cadets who graduated last from the academy, a person in his squadron wanted to go be a dentist. So we sent them to one of the best dental schools in the United States. So keep that in mind. The thing to do now is, I would say, make sure you're a great student. You know, if you're in high school, pick honor classes. If you're in middle school, make sure you keep up with your grades, math, science, English, reading, all of the basics. Begin to take a look at our standardized tests, ACT test, SAT test, so that you can do well on those exams and get one of our scholarship opportunities. Because once you have one of those opportunities, sky's the limit, so to speak. You can pick any one of these fields that you would like to. And it doesn't have to be flying an airplane. Obviously, that's my passion and my love, but there's a tremendous amount of educational opportunities across the board in so many different ways.
Excellent. The next question is going to come from the audience, and it's going to come from Mateo. Mateo, if you are ready, go ahead and unmute your mic and ask your question.
Yeah. Where has it been the most dangerous or complicated situation on the Gulf War?
I mean, I would say that in that, you know, there are many different days. where they all have their different types of challenges and what the challenge and what the sortie is on that particular day. I had already mentioned to you one sortie where I do remember vividly a lot of anti-aircraft fire on that particular sortie, and us continuing having to continue forward and wanting to continue forward and dedicated to go forward with our sortie and mission that day. But the missions are all can be different. Some days it's artillery sites that we need to, you know, take out. And that when you get close to those, there's a potential of a lot of anti-aircraft fire, you know, from them on those types of days. Other days, the difficulty finding the scuds because they're trying to hide them. So they all have a different kind of skill set to them, depending on what the mission is on that particular day. And obviously what the threat is that the intelligence people tell us could be in that area, or the intelligence that they have is in that area on those particular days. So it can vary. It's not a one size fits all when it comes to that.
All right. Next, we have a question from Clements.
Hello. What is your best memory of a mission or a flight?
Okay, my best memory of, and I always say it was my favorite day in the Air Force. And that is my mother, who I'm, you know, extremely close to, and my father, who I talked to you about, and his educational background and what he instilled in me. One day, and as I always say, it's my favorite day in the Air Force. My mother lived in the Midwest in St. Louis, and Scott Air Force Base is located in that area. And I was on what we call a cross-country mission, going from one base to another. We were doing some instrument flying training and those types of things. And I went to fly to St. Louis there. And my mother came out to the airbase along with two of her very closest friends in our family. And we came out and, you know, I ended up taking them for a meal and those types of things. And then I was going back to take off. And, you know, they stood out while I launched off and, you know, came by. And when I got back to my home base in Louisiana, you know, I called my mother, because I would call my mother after every sortie, even when I was in combat. I couldn't tell her what I was up to, but just her hearing my voice clearly brought her comfort. And when I called her on that day, I says, "Hey, Lois, I'm back. You know, it's great to see you and Mr. and Mrs. Smith." And my mother said to me, after I took off, that her friend turned to her and said, "Hey, Lois, you did a good job." And that meant the world to me, because my mother was very proud of me on that day.
All right, we got time for one more student question, and it's coming from Arnu. Arnu?
Hello. The question that I have is that you, when you were a pilot from the Air Force, you experiment a lot of the first of gravity. What was the maximum first that you have experimented, and how was this experience?
Okay, well, the requirement is for an Air Force fighter pilot, you have to be able to pull 9 G's. That means 9 times what your gravitational force is. Normally, like where we are, where you are in your classroom right now, you're under 1 G. That means whatever you weigh, if you weigh 125 pounds, that's the force that's being exerted upon you by the gravitational pull of the Earth. That multiplies. And so you can imagine up at 9 G's, if you weigh 125 pounds, you're up at over 1,000 pounds of weight that it feels like is being pressed down upon you. And you have to do that for 15 seconds without losing consciousness. And that's done in a centrifuge. That's where the testing is done. But when you're in the airplane, like when I flew the F-16, we pull the 9Gs, and there's a maneuver that we do to make sure in terms of your breathing and you have on a G suit so that you can continue to move forward and fly the aircraft, obviously, because if you lose consciousness, the amount of time at a minimum before you recover consciousness and you can do anything about it in terms of flying the airplane again is 45 seconds. And you can only imagine flying a fighter plane, what could happen in 45 seconds. So it's imperative that you remain conscious. And we go through a lot of training to be able to do that. The one good thing is when you're actually in the aircraft doing it, once you go past 4 to 5 Gs, you start seeing in black and white and no longer in color. You start to get tunnel vision, meaning your peripheral vision, you start to lose. And when you see those types of things, you have to either more aggressively take and do the maneuver to keep oxygen going from your heart and the blood flow to your brain to keep oxygen here at eye level, okay? Or you have to take some other type of action in terms of reducing the amount of G's that you're putting on an airplane. But obviously in combat, you may not be able to do that. And that's why it's very important to do the maneuver, do it properly. I will say that when you're flying the airplane, because you're in control of it, it's kind of like driving a car. If those of you who are old enough to have a driver's license, you generally don't really feel all the motion of driving a car and everything because you're focused on other things. If you're a passenger and somebody's a bad driver and they're hitting the brake all the time, that's another story. And so when you're flying the aircraft, because you're in charge of what's happening with the maneuvering on the airplane, I find it much easier to manage the G-forces than when you're in the centrifuge and they hit a button and you're launched off on their rocket ship.
Excellent. I just want to take a quick moment to give a shout out to our aviation instructors who are on this call, including Dr. Suzanne Banas, Ms. Kathleen Purdock out in Nevada, Mike Mitrani from Mater Middle High. Thank you guys so much and your students for joining us. I want to say just as a personal message to you, Willard, before I ask the closing question, you had mentioned a very touching story about your mother. I just want to let you know that I think she would be very, very proud of you and the work that you're doing promoting aviation and education and all of your great, great work. So thank you very much for that story. I'm glad we got that last story in about the G-forces because that was really interesting. You've got over 300 participants on the edge of their seat right now watching this live stream with us because you know, this has been very interesting and engaging. And what we do, we like to end with a final question, which is one last piece of advice that you have for any of our viewers who are interested in pursuing a career in aviation.
Okay, well, Jason, I'm going to say this applies to no matter what it is you want to do. It doesn't matter whether it has to do with an airplane or not. But I will always say, hey, your spirit, your faith in God and the Lord and whatever belief system that you have will motivate you to be able to take all that you've been given and develop a plan whereby you have what we say in our house. Those who toil with dedication and determination when no one is watching are those who shine the brightest when the lights come on. So no matter what your dream is, you take your spirit and it'll motivate you. And no matter what obstacle you come across, you are prepared for it. And you train your mind and your body for any circumstance. And then you take the things that are your strengths and emphasize them. You take your weaknesses and move to improve upon them. You develop a plan, and when the time comes, execute it. And if you do those, it doesn't matter what you want to do. You apply that to anything, and you will be a success at it.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. On behalf of the Aviation Careers Initiative and Edutainment and all of our viewers here today, I appreciate your time very, very much. What we're going to do at the end here is ask everybody who would like to unmute their microphones and turn their cameras on and give some love to our guest speaker, Willard Shepherd, as we sign out. Thank you very much, Willard.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.